Okay. Thank you, Mr. Fats. Saturday morning, good morning. I'm Tom. It's hot and cold. Minor technical things going on, but we're all sorted out. So, there. Well, it's springtime. Okay, we knew that, and it is above freezing. That's a good thing. It was snowing when I left. It was raining when I walked out of the house. Then it was snowing when I hit the road, and then it changed and stopped, and it's okay. I can deal with it. As long as we get some sunshine in between, I'm okay. So I had a friend, a good friend of mine, who offered to help work in my new shop. And he'd been after me for a while. And I kept putting him off. And I don't mind having help. But, there are times. I don't know what time I have available, because every day is a new adventure with me. And it's just, this car needs that. Somebody wants to talk to me. We're going to do a tank. I got to do the Fratastat on the Dooflicky. And, it just is endless interruptions. So it'd been like 2, 3, 4 weeks even asking me when we're going to, I want to come help you. So I said, okay, Wednesday. And I'm just going to tell everybody, leave me alone. I'm not around. Don't call. Well, it didn't work. Everybody called me still, but from my place of business to ask me goofy questions. But the day before, I was actually over there doing some work, and there's 7 loops in the radiant floor for the heat. I've got the heat running. Okay, it's all wired up, hardwired, and I realized at some point I have made an error. Now I know you sit out there in radio land and you say, how could Tom Gosi on the radio make a plumbing mistake? It just is counter to all that is right in the world. Well, I have to admit I goofed. And we had 7 loops, so there's 14 pipes. I labeled them. I numbered them as I put them in, and I crossed 2 pipes. So on one manifold, I had a feed going out, and the return came into the same manifold, which means nothing goes through. And it was 2 loops that were crossed, because then on the return, there were 2 loops that were both hooked wrong. So I figured out which ones they were. I've done this once before in my life. I am dyslexic. And I've done it once before on a radiant floor. And it's not horribly hard to figure out. It's pretty easy when the heat's going in. If you got 7 loops and there's heat, everything's warm. Heat going in, there should be, all those pipes should be warm. If they're not warm, they're not moving fluid. Or you've got an air block. So, and I thought I had bled all the air out. So anyway, I borrowed my son's Dremel tool. I ground off the crimp rings. I couldn't get a saw. It was tight quarters. So I get the thing unhooked. I shut off all the zones. I've got valves on everything. Shut the sucker off, and still antifreeze comes pouring out all over the floor. And this time of year, I probably, like most of you out there, if you work outdoors at all, you get the cracks in your fingers. Well, antifreeze and cracks in your fingers feels really good. It just makes the day complete. It makes the whole effort worthwhile. It makes you feel like you're alive. So my hands are sore as hell, right? So anyway, I get the thing. I get them swapped around. And, of course, I had to make one pipe longer, one I could cut short, because the manifolds are different heights. And I do all that. And then I realize I don't have enough antifreeze. And I had ordered it on, this is Tuesday, and I had ordered some to come in on Wednesday. I ordered it Tuesday evening, and the truck didn't get the notice. So it's going to come on Monday. In the meantime, I picked up. I wanted to have the heat running, all the loops. My friend's coming. We're going to heat the building. Well, let's get this done. Man, I want to tell you. It was, so I ran around Wednesday morning first thing, got antifreeze in the system, got the heat running, and very comfortable working. I mean, I'm only running the heat while I'm there. And within an hour, it's sensible heat. It's comfortable working condition. It hadn't been that cold anyway, but it's still, around freezing or a little above. And the place, even not in, being not insulated, is a lot better than it was. The beauty of a radiant floor is it heats the floor and essentially heats everything up 6 feet pretty much from the floor, which is where we usually spend our time. So it worked out well. Anyway, let's take a quick break here. When we come back, we'll take some phone calls. I got other things that went on this week that are of note. There's always something notable on Saturday morning, I think, except for starting late. That's not notable. We'll be back. It's hot and cold. And we're back. It's 8:20. It's hot and cold Saturday morning. Good morning again. I'm Tom and Mr. Sousa in the background. I haven't had any Sousa music in a long time, have we? Let's march around a little bit. Get the blood flowing. We got a picture of Mr. Sousa here. He's got all these medals. He was no shrinking violet. He's got medals. Okay. All right. That's enough of that. Oh, wait a minute. That's a nice part, too. Okay. I'm not done with the heating system stories. You thought I was. You thought, hey, we can make day 21. We don't have no more heating stories. But the heating system is, like I say, is in and running. And I have a temporary fuel tank, which is a 5-gallon kerosene container that I put diesel fuel in to run the thing. So I needed an oil tank, and in my adult life now, probably for the past 20-some years, I've used Roth oil tanks. Roth oil tank is a plastic tank made in Germany, comes with a lifetime warranty not to leak. It has an outer shell that is galvanized, so it's a dual containment tank. It's got a lot of unique features, one of which is it's taller than a regular oil tank, so it has a smaller footprint, which was kind of important to me. And it's relatively light. It comes with handles, so you can pick it up and carry it around when it's not full of oil. So I was looking for one, and they're not a cheap date. They're an expensive tank, but it's a really well-engineered German thing. And I found one used down the coast, so my wife and I went for a trip Saturday afternoon to pick up the tank. And so I've got it back in my shop, and I'm going to hook up the tank today, right? So I've got the fuel line, and I picked up some conduit this morning to put the fuel line in, and I've got a flexible fuel line that would go from the copper fuel line to the oil burner because it's got a swing door, so it makes servicing real easy. You don't have to worry about kinking the copper line. So I've got all that. But I needed a couple things, and I needed the conduit. I picked that up this morning, right? But you've got two black iron pipes that are the fill pipes for the oil tank. Okay. And so I need those fittings. So I was going to pick them up this morning. I go to Home Depot. I've got all this stuff. I wrote down a list. I didn't write down the black iron pipe, and I needed a couple other fittings for tying things together. And I pull into the radio station here. I said, oh, my goodness, I don't think I used exactly those words. I forgot. I didn't write it down, man. And so back I will go. I'm not going to Home Depot in Bangor on Saturday. I'm sorry. That's against my religion. Saturday morning at 6 a.m., it's great. Saturday morning at any time after 9 is pretty much a zoo, and I've done it. I'm not doing it again. I will hit another Home Depot sometime this weekend. So, but I will put together the rest of the system. And at that point, we then have a functioning system that is all kosher. Everything is up to code. I don't run the system without me being there because I've got this 5-gallon bucket sitting on the floor with a pipe stuck in it. And it's relatively safe, but you don't want to have an accident. We'll sort that one out. Oh, my goodness. The other big news of the week, I guess, for at least in my world, is I actually have a functional garage door. And I've told my friends this, and they said, well, we don't see a garage door. And I say, well, that's because the garage door is behind the siding in the building. I've got to cut the hole, got to cut the siding now. And that may be this weekend. That's one of the things I picked up with some trim to trim out the door. And but got it functioning the right way. Everything works. The door goes up and down, and it's lockable. And it seems like I kind of didn't booger that one up. I haven't done a lot of garage doors in my life, but we did a TV show once with our friends from PDQ Door, and I watched these guys who do this every day just bang that sucker out. I was very impressed. So I said, well, if they can do it in relatively short time, I could do it in relatively long time. So, there was a lot of referral to the internet to make sure, to refresh my memory, because it was a while ago, and but it all worked. So that's good. And, oh, by the way, I'm going to put this plug out there, because we are moving our business at some point in the not-too-distant future, within the next 30 days. I don't think it's going to be the end of March at the rate I'm going, because that's only what?
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 7. 8 days?
8 days. I will not be moved out in 8 days. I personal guarantee, but maybe 20 days. We're close. So there is stuff I've got in my shop that I've got to not move. I'm not going to move. One of which is, and I mentioned this on the radio before, and nobody is getting it. And I don't quite understand it, because I just went crazy for it, which maybe is the reason why. There's if you go down to Belfast on Route 1, you know where MBNA used to be, and now it's Athena Healthcare. You look at those buildings, the trim, the fascia trim on those buildings, I've got a bunch of it. It's a product called Fypon, F-Y-P-O-N. And what it is a high-density foam trim. It's got dentals, it's got huge coves, and it's crazy money. It's like 12-foot lengths, and they're like $200-$300 a piece. I've got a bunch of it, and I've not taken it with me, and I'm gonna sell it. I'm gonna sell it for a small fraction of what it's worth, but I want to move all of it, not just a few pieces, and I probably have 20-30 pieces of it. So if somebody's interested in that, come in and look, or email me. I will send you pictures of it. You can see. I have the model. I have the style numbers. I don't have them with me. There was another thing too. There's a lot of stuff. the germane to the previous topic. I've got a lot of new garage door track that we do not need. Mostly 7 or 8 foot. Mostly 7 foot, I think. But I got a bunch of it, and that's going out the door cheap. And there was a guy who emailed me. I have an ad up on Craigslist for garage door stuff. If you're listening, you were looking for 8 foot door panels. We do have some. So get back. I can't find your email. I don't know what happened to it. For some reason, things expunged from my computer. I'm not sure why. I'm not sure how all my computers are linked together with my iPhone. And I think if I delete from one thing, it goes away sometimes elsewhere. And that's just very helpful, especially if it's related to a customer. Who needs customers, right? Oh, my goodness. We got some. We actually got some cars that people have asked me about as well that are getting ready to go. The one that is pretty much not quite finished, we got to clean it up a little bit. We've got an 04 Tacoma four-wheel drive with 279,000 miles on it. And it's stickered, and we're going to just spiff it up a little bit. Has a new Toyota frame on it, a relatively new Toyota. Toyota replaced the frame, I would say, within the past 5 years. So that's one. I've got another one that we picked up last week that also an 04 that has a new frame. And we've got to do some work on that one. That's a lower mile car. And then my wife's favorite car, which I'm selling, is a white Highlander hybrid. And that'll be probably going out front later today. So those are all. I love white Toyotas. I don't know what it is, but they're just spiffy-looking cars. So we've got that. I have also, there's another one. I think that's going out this morning. It's a 2012 Prius that needed a little bit of love. We get it all ready, right? My daughter's out there cleaning it, and the battery had gone flat. And, you know, cars sit, we get a car in and it sits for a little bit. The 12-volt battery goes flat. It's not a big deal. We desulfate it, recharge it, and it's fine. So we recharged it, and my son Pete noted that the hatch, the light was on for the rear hatch. It wasn't latching, so he slammed it and it latched. And we did the battery, and the car's fine. And my daughter's cleaning it yesterday. She says the rear hatch is not latching, so that was a significant issue. So I dug into it, and the rear hatch apparently is intermittent. So I had to tear the car apart, and I tried cleaning and lubricating the latch, and it just wasn't quite. It was like, can't quite get there. We can't. So I replaced the latch assembly yesterday and locks, and it's always good. It's always good if you can lock the car. So we've got that. That one's going out. So we've got some interesting stuff coming. We got more coming in. I've got a plug-in hybrid that's coming in very soon. That may be already sold, but at least I've never handled a plug-in hybrid. We'll have the opportunity to see what that's all about. That'll be an interesting one. Well, I'll tell you what, let's take a quick break here. Let's catch up on the business end of things. When we come back, we will take some calls at 1-800-966-1039. It is hot and cold Saturday morning. Stay with us. Oh, this is what we need. We need some sunshine. Steely Dan's going to give us the sunshine right now. There we go. Okay, we're back. It's 8:37. It's hot and cold Saturday morning. And, General Appliance and Brewer is the place. You knew that. Do we even need to have this discussion? It's March 23rd, 2019. How many years have we talked about this place? General Appliance on Center Street and Brewer. Open 9 to 4 Monday through Friday. If you're looking for the parts or service, the help you need to make the washer, dryer, stove, refrigerator, gas refrigerator. What? They service gas refrigerators. 989-4341. Okay. I done my due diligence. 989-4341. General Appliance and Brewer. Write it down. You know you need you will need that number someday. And better yet, memorize it. Okay? You've done it. Okay. Then I'll shut up. No more talk about that. Let's go to the phones. Good morning. You're on the Voice of Maine.
Hi, Tom. How you doing?
Good. How are you?
Great. I was listening to your show about 3 weeks ago, and unfortunately, I got right at the end of the conversation. You were talking about PEX tubing for domestic water and how you were using 3/8 line. And I got thinking about it. Like I probably ought to switch mine. I put 3/4 inch going to my bathrooms and then teed off those with 1/2 inch because I didn't want to have the problem that I'd heard from years ago. People like flushing the toilet or running water in another room caused people to get hot, cold showers and that kind of stuff, or hot showers. Would that be a problem, do you think, or how can I avoid that?
Well, the way that people avoid that is the beauty of PEX, of course, is it's relatively low cost. But and you'll see this a lot if you see a show where they're renovating and they're doing a house over, usually they're doing what's called a home run plumbing system. So they'll have a manifold of some size, maybe 3/4 inch, maybe even 1 inch. And they'll then go with a single line of PEX tubing from a manifold to the appliance. So in the case of your bathroom, you've got one cold water line going to the lavatory, one cold water line going to the toilet, one cold water line going to the shower or bathtub. And those can be 3/8 or 1/2 inch. And same, you'll have another manifold for hot water, same deal. And what's happening now is if there's a fixture on the other side of the house, it kind of balances in terms of everything kind of getting the same pressure. Not quite, but it kind of works out, excuse me, a little bit easier to keep things balanced. And there's a lot of there's some variations on the theme, but that's the gist of it. And what's nice about it is you can have a shutoff for each fixture. So if you decide that the toilet is leaking, you can just shut off the feed to the toilet and that whole line is disabled, whereas you'll still have water going to the sink and to the bathtub, and you can service whatever needs to be serviced, you know, if there's a leaky something. You know, when I did my house, I did 3/8 inch, and I wound up having to manifold. I think we had 3/4 inch manifolds, and all the manifolds I could get at the time, excuse me, I was working directly with the manufacturer for the TV show we were doing, was 1/2 inch. I said, I want to run 3/8. That makes more sense economically from heat loss. And so what we wound up doing is getting 1/2 inch manifolds that we then bumped down with reducers to 3/8 inch and ran it all. Now everybody does it in 3/8, and it works well. There's some limitations. I mean, longer runs could be a problem. If it's a huge house, you might have to go with 1/2 inch instead. And when I went to do the next project, which was a different house, everybody had 3/8. I was mentally prepared for 1/2 inch, and everybody had 3/8. And that's what folks have been using since. So I guess I wasn't ahead of the curve. I'd gotten it from somewhere, and I said, this makes really good sense. So
Now the shower has the manifold, the shower control is 1/2 inch. Is that what they wanted, is 1/2 inch going into that, though? I mean, are we going to lose any water?
You know, if it's not a huge run, I mean, if you're doing 20, 30 feet, you could do it with, if you want to replumb everything, you can do it with 3/8 inch. You know, just use a reducing coupling to reduce it.
Yeah. I'm getting ready to redo the bathroom, and I was just wondering how we should go with that. Now, one other question. I was in a house. I've got 1/2 inch radiant in my floors.
Mm-hmm.
And I was in a house, a newer house, a while back, and they got 3/8 in the floor.
Yep.
I'm wondering about that, how efficient that is and whatnot.
I would be inclined to stay with the 1/2 inch. The reason is there is pressure drop associated with smaller diameter tubing, and that's always a trade-off. And a radiant floor, you normally have long runs. You're going to have maybe 100-foot runs. If you had really short runs, you could use 3/8. But now you're dealing with huge manifolds. Now, if you've got a 1,000-square-foot house, you're probably using 1,000 lineal feet of tubing. If you're using 3/8, maybe you can only run 100-foot loops, whereas 1/2 inch, you could run 200 or 300-foot loops and not suffer a major consequence in terms of pressure drop. So, so usually 1/2 inch is the norm, and I think that's a good place to be when it comes to radiant heating.
Okay. All right, great. Thank you very much.
You're welcome. Bye-bye. Yeah, in the floor we just did in our shop, I used 300-foot loops, which is the maximum for 1/2 inch, because then you're getting into bigger pumps, and pumping power gets more expensive. So that's what, it was 1,920 square feet, a slab. I've got 2,100 lineal feet of tubing, and all the loops are the same length, so I didn't have to worry about balancing things, and it works fine. Once you get the loops plumbed properly, it works great. What a concept! And you know, the funny thing was, I had a Sharpie with me. As I put a loop in, I put 1, 1, 2, 2, 3, 3. Then I put tape, because we didn't pressurize it. I put tape over the ends of the manifolds and and I labeled them again on the tape. And then I made a mistake. But, you know, they're all fixable. I didn't burn the building down. So I try not to do things like that. You know, I do more... Or less strenuous errors. I always stop and think diligently when it comes to fire. So that, I think that's a wise thing. Let's go over to line one. Good morning. You're on the Voice of Maine.
Hey, Tom. This is John over on Verona.
Hey.
Hey, how are you?
Good. How are you?
I'm fine. I'm hankering for some PV on my roof.
Okay.
What do you think I should do?
I think you should put some on, John.
I keep checking prices, and you know it definitely dropped. But I don't. If I look at return on investment, I don't see it dropping that much. It's still like 10 years anyway.
Well, yeah.
Depending on how big the system.
Well, it depends on what you're spending, John. It depends where you shop. You know, I see PVs now that are running 50, 60 cents a watt for the panels.
Yeah.
And then in terms of if you're using a single inverter, grid tie inverter, you're probably 30, 40 cents a watt. If you're using a micro inverter, you'd be a little bit more, maybe 10 cents a watt more on that range. So, you know, and then you can buy the mounting systems that are kind of fancy extrusions, or you can make your own. I've always made my own out of just aluminum angle. I have a shear that cuts eighth inch aluminum angle and will also punch holes in it. And that's easy enough to pick up. And then I always grab my stainless steel hardware on eBay. And because I'm a little uncomfortable spending. I mean, if you're a contractor and you're putting up a system, you want to get on and off that roof as quickly as possible. If you're a do-it-yourselfer, you got sweat equity, so you can maybe spend a couple hours more putting up the system in terms of mounting it, because that's the lion's share of the work in terms of the labor. But I think I mentioned last week, I had this lady call me who was having a big system put in, 24 kilowatts. It was a business, small business.
That's a big one.
$52,000 installed. So that's about, what, wow. 225 a watt, something like maybe 230 a watt. I don't remember the exact number now. But that's pretty cheap data, I thought, compared to, say, 5 years ago and 10 years ago. It was ridiculous. So
now, in the past, Tom, you've talked about, I think it was somebody in Vermont that had some kind of a ground mount, and I don't think it was necessarily a tracker, but you would physically go out and adjust it a few times a year. And I've looked online and I've seen places that have that stuff. But the one you talked about, I think, I'm sure it was Vermont, but maybe it wasn't. Sounds like a good way to go. I think the argument was is that you do this and you move it a few times a year and you can have a smaller array and still get the same amount of juice out of it.
It was a tracker, and and I'm not sure. I'm looking right now. Excuse me. One is, I think this is the guys. These are the guys. Excuse me. All Earth Renewables. And what they have is a tracker that tracks the sun on a daily basis. Also, will adjust for the time of year, and will adjust for the weather. So if there's a bad storm coming, it will either put the panel horizontal to shed the wind or vertical to shed the snow. And they also, and I have a good friend, my friend who helped me last week with the working in the shop has one. And he had a contractor help him put it in. And the tracker folks claim a 30% performance bump. The 30% performance bump is about equivalent to the cost of, it makes the cost of the tracker equal to extra panels. So you have less panels, you have less wiring, blah, blah, blah. But that's what they kind of, I don't know if they guarantee it, but that's what they say is going to happen. The reality is 50%. And my friend is seeing that. He's seen it now for, had it in for 4 years or something like that. And if something malfunctions, it feeds back to the manufacturer, and they can tell you what part needs to be replaced. So this thing's
either wireless or whatever, hooked to the internet, so that you monitor it all the time.
And most PV systems do that now. They'll give you an access
through the inverter, I think. Not necessarily outdoors at your array.
Right. You're not running a Cat 5 line out, but the I don't know because I've never wired one, but I do know that the they can any PV system. Usually, there's a hookup to allow you to monitor all the panels and see what the output of the system is.
Makes it fun.
Yeah, you can see what's going on if you've got a shading issue or not. And if you've got good access to the sun, you've got a good performance bump on the thing. And if you don't want to put it on a roof, it's fantastic, and it's kind of a cool thing. I remember. Years ago, I went to Vermont for something, and we stopped for gas somewhere, and just across the street from the gas station was a B&B, and this is going back a few years ago, and they had a whole, I'll call it a farm. It was, you know, they had a whole array of these things sitting there in the field, trackers, and I thought, wow, what's that? I never, you know, I thought, well, you know, and I've always thought for years, and Dick and I would poo-poo the whole idea of trackers being not a good thing in our climate. But these Vermont guys have kind of proven the case.
So it's small earth renewables?
All earth, A-L-L.
Oh, all earth, okay. All right, I'm going to have to look that up.
Yeah. There's a couple of them in Vermont. There's that's the one that I just came across. I'm not sure this is the one that my friend has. I think it is. It's in Williston, Vermont.
Okay. Yeah, Vermont's littered with solar farms. They're all over the place. If you drive up whatever that is, 91 or whatever it is, they're littered all over the place.
The other thing about the tracker that's kind of interesting is you can rotate the thing around as you're mounting the panels. So it makes it easier to access them.
Easier to do it, yeah. That's one of the things that they talk about. You can lay it flat, and then you can work, you know, come up underneath and put everything but the last panel in or something, do all your wiring, all that stuff from underneath makes it a little bit easier, I think. I just think that there's a trade-off. If you have it on your roof and it snows and you can't clean it off and then you got to wait.
Yep.
I've got a perfect roof for it, and I set my building that way specifically for that. When I built it, it's perfect, you know, but I still say that, you know, you got a lot of snow sitting on there this winter, you know, certainly not as much as the north side of the roof, but it still sat there for a while.
Yeah.
Okay, cool. All right, I'm going to look that up right now.
Okay, good luck.
All right, thank you, Tom.
You're welcome. Bye-bye. Let's see. We got some texts came in. One is, what's your opinion on burning dimensional lumber? Well, you know, I kind of look forward to having lumber scraps because I'll throw them in the wood stove, especially this time of year when I just want to maybe take the chill off the house. The thermostat says it's 70, but so the heat's not running, but at the outer fringes of the house, it feels a little chilly. So I have no problem with that. You don't want to be burning pressure-treated dimensional lumber. That's not a good thing to do. It should never be burned. But if you got kiln dry 2x4s, anything, or even if it's wet. I mean, I'm always scrounging scrap because we always have stuff coming in on pallets, not necessarily pallets, but on skids. You know, they have a couple of feet underneath some steel or whatever we ordered for a tank. I'll cut those up, take them home, burn them. And I have these boxes. I load them up in the car, get sawdust all over the car, of course, but bring them down to the basement and just let them sit there. Even if they're green or not green, excuse me, but wet, they've been out in the rain. They sit in the basement for a little while, they dry. I mean, I'm not talking about a tremendous amount of lumber here, but I got no problem with that. Especially if I've already, you know, if I needed a piece that was 7 feet, 3 inches, and I got 5 inches, 8 inches, 10 inches, whatever left over, that's going into the scrap because it's probably not going to be usable. Except if I need a piece of wood for beating on something with a hammer. But I usually have those. That's not a problem. It's usually finding the hammer that's the problem. I find plywood and OSB, I have no issues burning that as well. Some people might, but I don't think there's anything in there that's a big deal for burning in a wood stove. So what else? Well, I'll save this for next hour. We got to take a break here, and let's just find the right tune. That's what we should do. I'm not sure this is the right tune, but this is the one you're going to get. Do we have? We got time? Yeah, we got time. All right. This is when I was in college. I met this guy. His name was Doug. And he turned out, his whole professional career, he was an engineer for the Today Show on NBC. He lives down in New York. And he introduced me to a whole bunch of different folk music I'd never heard of. One was the Holy Modal Rounders. The other was these guys, the McGee Brothers. The McGee Brothers used to back up Uncle Dave Makin. And hopefully that name rings a bell to somebody out there in Radio Land. There might be one person. But I just flipped when I heard these guys because they're just too good. They're too good to pass up. Here we go. We'll be back in a bit. Stay with us, hot and cold. Okay, we'll do that. It's 9:06, hot and cold. I made a mistake. I admit it. So right now, we're back on the air. There's too much going on. You have no idea. Anyway, our phone number is 1-800-966-1039. We got text line 601-207-4478. Text line has been anemic today. My goodness. Usually there's somebody sending me some kind of snarky comment or asking a question, and today's nothing. Oh, and I just noticed here the button has popped off of the control panel. The whole place is going to hell in a basket. While we got no phone calls, a couple of years ago, oh gosh, it was probably 5-6 years ago, I wound up buying a thermal imaging camera for my iPhone, made by a company called Seek, S-E-E-K. And it was $200. I said, this is going to be the best $200 I ever spent. And Dick Hill was very impressed. I was very impressed. Comes in a little plastic case. I used to keep it at my desk, you know. But I don't have that many thermal imaging needs at my desk. So being as it is winter time, and I've got this coat with all these pockets, my coat has got more electronics in it than anything. So I carry my thermal imaging camera with me everywhere. And one of the things I do, just because I want to see what's going on, is I would check my radiant floor. And I could see the spots where I had mixed the lines and there was no flow. But the other day I was showing my friend who came to help, and we're to a point for a long time, because there was ice on the floor as well. You would look at the floor with the thermal imaging camera and you could just get a glimmer of a heated line in the floor. Well, now they're red line, you know, it's a color thermal image. So red is really hot, blue is cold. And now all the heated lines are very pronounced because A, there's no ice on the floor, and B, the floor is drying out and heating up. And so the beauty of this and the need for it, because I never had to justify it to my wife. My wife is pretty patient with me. And but the beauty of it is, if I needed to put some anchor into the floor, I know exactly where the tubing is, and I can pinpoint where there is no tubing, and we can put things in. So I get to play show and tell with people when it comes to radiant floors, at least. So our phone number again, 1-800-966-1039. The text line is 601-207-4478. Let's go back to the phones. Good morning. You're on the Voice of Maine. Hello?
Hey, I was wondering if you could give me a good paint you'd recommend for a metal roof.
Oh, gosh. That's a good question. I don't. I would hit Sherwin-Williams, though, because that's kind of a specialty thing. I mean, you could probably get away with a latex paint, but I think there's something better than it. And it could be a high-quality latex or a urethane. I know the paints that go on metal roofing are either urethanes or silicone-based paints. They just tend to stand up better. If there is some oxidation on the metal roof, I know it'll take latex, but I think you could probably do a little better. And I would hit a place like Sherwin-Williams because it is a little bit more of a specialty, and I would only want to do it one time.
Now, usually, I think in the past they used to have to put a prime coat on first if there's rust underneath.
Yeah,
I think they'd used Rust-Oleum before, but I was just sure. Wondering if there wasn't something.
There are things. There is also a Geocel, G-E-O-C-E-L, makes a paint for metal roofing.
Okay.
It's a little bit, it's a more viscous, it's kind of like latex paint. You can wash it with water, but it's more viscous and will stand up. I think you have to prime rust. But if it's just metal that is not, it's got, you know, solid paint on it, I don't think you have to prime for that. But you can Google Geocell and you can find the product as well.
Okay.
And I also think Home Depot sells roof paint. Now that I think about it, it's in the roofing aisle. It's called Snow Bright or something like that.
All right. right?
It's white, though. You'd have to get it tinted if you wanted a different color.
Okay.
All right. Good
all
luck.
Right, thanks a lot. Okay,
you're welcome. Yeah, there are companies that make specific, you know, older metal roofs didn't have the kind of coatings that today's roofs have. And eventually all metal roofs are going to need to be painted. And so there's a number of different options out there. And they're all kind of semi-latex. Some of these coatings can actually be applied as the roof itself. There tend to be more of a EPDM rubber type thing. I remember one of the first times I used this stuff, I was going over, I was changing the pitch on what was a relatively flat porch roof, and they had a mesh that you put down. You coated wooden surface, you put this mesh down, bedded it in some liquid rubbery kind of stuff, then you coated the top side, and then you put a protective coat over that, and there were several layers here. I got it on my hands, and it was latex-based. I mean, you could wash it off with water, but it cured in the time. I wasn't wearing gloves, duh, and it cured. And I was probably an hour and a half, 2 hours doing this. It wasn't a big roof, but it was all these different layers, and I did the whole thing. Stuff set up pretty quick. And it came time to go inside and wash up. And it would not come off my hand. I mean, it literally, as my friend Chris Hayden says, it stuck like grim death. And I mean, this was really grim death. It just stayed. And I was starting to freak out a little bit. And I didn't have a lot of solvents on hand at the time. I suspect something solventy like acetone or toluene or naphtha, one of those really healthy solvents, would get it off your skin. But I scrubbed. My hands were really raw when I got done getting it off my hands. It was that it cured and set up very quick. I was impressed. It did a good job, and I used it on. I also had a metal sheet metal roof. It wasn't standing seam. It was just a flat sheet metal roof that had been soldered together probably 100 years earlier, and that was rusty. And I used it for that as well. It did a really good job. We painted it all white. House was white. We did the roof white. Probably wasn't the brightest thing I've done, in that the white was right outside bedroom windows, our bedroom in particular, and we had south-facing windows, so we got a lot of reflective gain off of that white roof into the rooms that were adjacent to it. And they were nice and warm in the summertime. So, those products work well. And I think the Home Depot stuff is fairly cheap. I don't know if that means it's very reliable. There might be a warranty on it. Because, if white works for you, you're all set. If you need, but I think they're all tintable. I've never tinted latex paint myself, I don't believe. Something's telling me I might have. But it's you know, I'm sure a place like Sherwin-Williams would have the ability to make the tint, and probably has something similar that probably has a better warranty. Okay, we'll take a break now. Let's see, we're going to lose that one. We're going to go, oh, man, you're going to get a little bit of Jimmy Smith Saturday morning. I can't get enough Jimmy Smith. Oh, yeah, some cool jazz Saturday morning. It's hot and cold. Stay with us. We'll be back in just a bit. Okay, we're back. It's 9:19. It's hot and cold Saturday morning. Good morning again. I'm Tom. Phone number is 1-800-966-1039. Text 601-207-4478. Back to the phones. Good morning. You're on the Voice of Maine.
Hello? Hey, good morning, Tom.
Hi.
You guys still doing the styrofoam?
No, we're not. Not right now.
Okay.
Sorry.
I got a little project this summer over on Swan Lake. I got to do some work there.
You could check back with us later in the season. Right now, we have not what we do have. We're using in our building, and that wasn't anything that was great.
Okay, it might be a couple months away. That'd be good.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Just check back.
All right.
Okay.
Yeah,
thank you.
Bye bye.
Yeah. We're. I think what we're going to do after we move, have some kind of grand opening thing, and I've had some preliminary conversations, I think, with John about doing a live remote So I think we'll probably do that. So I don't have to drive to Bangor that Saturday morning. We could just be there, and we'll have stuff. We're thinking promotions, marketing. That's what we're doing. So we've got a new logo that my daughter and I came up with, which is a copy of it. Actually, it's an old Buick logo, but we kind of updated it. So old is new again. Our phone number, 1-800-966-1039, text is 601-207-4478. So what else we got going on? We've been boxing stuff up. I've been a lot of stuff I don't use every day, but yeah, you can't let that go. I've got thermocouples from Dick Hill. I can't get rid of thermocouples Dick Hill gave me. I'm sorry. I can't get rid of the books Dick Hill gave me. That's just, I got to, you know, I'm just hoping there's some osmosis there that takes place. Thermocouples and books, of course, are always of value. So that's a good thing. I've got like, oh God, I must have 10 boxes of Nile Therm control modules that are potted in epoxy that have no use for anybody unless you have a Nile Therm. And I don't think of the people who have Nile Therm heat pump water heaters out there, many of them need, I would bet one box would be more than enough for our needs. Then I've got these, I don't know if you've ever seen these snorkel stove hot tubs. There's cedar hot tubs, and they have a submerged stove in it. I did some work for the snorkel stove company years ago. So I've got a couple of their stoves that, you know, what am I going to do with those? I'm not going to make myself a snorkel stove hot tub. If you have a snorkel, excuse me, you're building your own cedar hot tub and you want a snorkel stove, I got a deal for you. As you start putting stuff in boxes and taking down shelves and I stuck that under the bench there. I was going to use that sometime. I got a lot of 24, 36, and 48 volt DC coil 800 amp relays. Those are valuable. I got them for making electric cars that run like 1900 vintage electric cars. So I've got those, and I can't let those. They have scrap value just in the car. I mean, they have massive copper on them. But I don't want to scrap them out because if you look them up, they're stupid money. I mean, they're crazy expensive if you had the need. I don't have the need right now. And then we got plastic welders. We've got more plastic welders than we know what to do with. So in all seriousness, if you need to weld plastic sheeting together for greenhouses or for packaging or whatever, we need to talk seriously. I've got several that we have put together specifically for our needs that we do not need anymore. And some of those are not cheap dates. So not from your friend Tom, but if you were to go buy them new, they're ridiculous. So, and we've got some fairly sophisticated equipment we put together that I don't need. And I've been then my wife says to me last night, "So what about those electric cars in the shop?" So, and I had a guy, I've got one of them, I think, on Craigslist, and I dropped the price to $1,295 for a Geo Metro electric vehicle that runs. It needs batteries. And somebody emails me, said, "What's the least you'll take?" It's $1,295. You go buy the parts, it'd be $2,000-$3,000. Just the electric car parts, not the car. The Geo Metro is invaluable. Who wouldn't want a Geo Metro? But they swap over to a lot of things. So, well, let's see. Tom, I've heard of many asking about insulation over the past few weeks. There's a great place in the old Lemforder building in Brewer that's got some. Okay. That's good to know. And let's see. Are you going to have a yard sale before you move? If so, could you say the date on the radio and post it on your website? Absolutely. I will be speaking highly of this for, and actually it would, the only thing we're trying to do short of actually doing the, saying now let's do it is we've still got stuff in there. We got too much stuff that we're trying to move out and it would get very confusing. But over the next, it's coming up pretty quick here. It would be within the next 30 days and probably less. So as I say, we're boxing things now and getting them out. And Pete wants me to start in the back of the building and work my way forward, which I'm doing. And we're disassembling shelving and reassembling it in the new location. And at some point, I have to figure out where everything goes. That's going to be fun. I think one of the things, you know, that would make sense. Now, you tell me if this is a bad idea. I have always thought, I'm going to preface this with a story. Years ago, when I was a kid, I worked for a wholesale florist and brewer, Bob Bennett. And Bob had a guy who worked there. His name was Wayne Evans. And Wayne was just one of the greatest guys ever. Just a nice man to work with, low-key. And we used to make fun of Wayne at lunchtime. He'd have his lunch, and there was a little storage closet behind the main office away from the regular activity. He would take a nap. And he had that. We were set wholesale flowers, so the flowers would come in from South America. They're wrapped in like eighth-inch expanded polystyrene plastic, you know, that white sheet kind of plastic. So Wayne made himself up a little bunk in this back room. He would take a nap, and we always thought that was a hoot. Wayne has taken a nap and never wanted to interrupt him. He's a nice man. He's taken a nap. And we thought he was old. I think he was 45. And he was smart enough to take a break, and you know, and I held him in high esteem for many reasons, and it was always kind of envious, and thought that was not a bad thing to take a nap at lunch. I didn't have a nook like he did where you could go and it was dark and you could go to sleep for 20 minutes, but and as I get older, I think what a smart man. So I'm thinking. My new shop, I've been known to sit in my chair and close my eyes at lunchtime for 5 minutes till the phone rings. But wouldn't it be a slick thing to have a hammock? You could hide it, have a couple hooks there. Nobody knows what those hooks are for except me and anybody who sees me in the hammock at lunchtime. But that's it just came to me. I've always said I'm going to do it. I never had the right situation. I never had the walls close enough, and I think I'll find a place. That's good. That's good. I don't even need to write that one down. I'm going to remember that one when I leave here. So our phone number, 1-800-966-1039. Text line is 601-207-4478. We got a break coming up in just a minute, but We could take a text or we could take a phone call in the interim if you so desired. But if that don't happen, we'll just take the – well, I'll tell you what. Let's take the break now while there's nothing going on, and then we have all this time to chat after the break. So stay with us. We'll be right back. And we're back. It's 9:34. It's the Voice of Maine. Hot and cold Saturday morning, and it's me, Tom. And let's see. Phone number's 1-800-966-1039. The text line is 601-207-4478. Let's see. Tom, what is your opinion of PV roof shingles? It's an interesting concept. I think the whole concept of an integrated roof that's photovoltaic is important. I don't think the shingles make much sense. The dilemma is this: they're breakable. And if you break, you know, they're glass, usually sheathed with glass. There's probably some plastic ones out there now. But if they do break, that's an issue. And wiring is an issue. You know, you got to stop and think about the wiring. It's really critical. Bosch, a couple of years ago, put out a whole bunch of photovoltaic panels. And Bosch is no slouch fly-by-night company. And this is a testimonial to them. They had a bunch of standard-sized panels that they felt had compromised solder joints inside the panel, and they would run a little bit warmer than normal, and they pulled them all off the market. Because if you put it on your roof, and if it did overheat, it could potentially start a fire. The reality is they'd still be serviceable elsewhere. You put them on a rack mount or a fence or something, you know, away from the building. If they overheated, it's not a big deal. The panel gets damaged, but that's I have that same concern when it comes to individual shingles, which maybe even if they're bigger shingles, like the size of a the width of a standard asphalt shingle, well, it's 3 feet by maybe, I don't know, 8 inches tall. But you still have to wire those. And that's a lot of connections. So, you know, this becomes a potential issue. Whereas a standard photovoltaic panel that is sort of becoming the industry standard is maybe 39 inches by 66 inches. Some of them are bigger. There's a lot less wiring involved. There's still wiring. And one of the things that solar installers do to get around, to keep wiring to a minimum, is they will, let's say you're doing a 5 kilowatt, 6 kilowatt system, 5 or 6,000 watts on your roof. They will wire the panels in series. So the panel might be a nominal 24 volts DC, and they have plugs, and you could plug them together in series. And you'll have, you just put the panels up on the roof and plug, and you've got two wires going off the roof, one positive, one negative, and maybe 1,000 volts DC, which scares the living daylights out of me. But it's simple. There's very few wiring connections, and it either works or it doesn't work. If you get a bad wiring connection, the system stops working. I'm not crazy about that system, but it's reliable. I don't know how durable it is. It's certainly fixable. It's not a system destroyer, if you will. It's a system. I could see the potential for some service needed in the future. Maybe not. I don't know. No, we don't know. But it's not a big deal. But what I'm getting at is, if you got shingles, you've got what, hundreds of panels, if not even more, that you've got to wire up, and that can get a little hairy in my book. Coupled with the fact that if one breaks, and you want to replace it, you know, if you have to replace a shingle on a roof, asphalt shingles usually can lift up on a warm summer day and replace a single shingle. That rhymes, doesn't it? I'm not sure you could do that with a rigid photovoltaic shingle. Maybe you could, but you got to, all its wiring has got to go through the roof, and then you have to have access to it on the bottom side of underneath the roof somehow. So I think it's a cool concept, but I just don't see it being practical. The reality of Mother Nature causing trouble could be very significant. So, and I've seen them come and go, and I think Elon Musk has talked about them. Is his company Solar One, I think, something like that. And I just don't see it being viable. Now, if we were to, and I've had this conversation with folks about how one would implement this. If you take that standard panel as 39 by 66, why couldn't that be the roof? Same reason, it's glass, basically. And if it breaks, you've got to be able to change it out. Well, there's ways to, I mean, this is not rocket science. If you look at a skyscraper with glass panels on the walls, it's a very similar concept. Granted, glass panels on the walls are for seeing through usually, but they're up there. They shed weather, and if they were a roof system, they could be panelized and sealed, and that's going to mean gasketing and maybe mutton bars, or not mutton bars, but glazing caps that go over where the panels came together. But that would be feasible, and it would bring the cost of roofing down. It would mean that you need access to the backside of the roof. It would also mean you've got a glass roof. What's the saying? People who live in glass houses shoot and throw stones. You know, the photovoltaic panels have a plastic backing, and the panels are, the cells, excuse me, are bedded in silicone. So if you've seen a broken photovoltaic panel, they're pretty rugged. They're tempered glass, and they do not shatter and necessarily leak, and would be a lot easier, I think, to replace. In that case, I think there's potential where that becomes the roofing system, the sheathing, the whole schmear. But now you've got to make sure that the panels can carry snow load, and then there's physical structure aspects to it. But I think that makes more sense, I think. And it's probably a lot more practical. But nobody's doing that. I was thinking of doing it and haven't. But I'd love to try it sometime on a building, just because I know it's possible. My adhesives guys advise against it, but you know, you can't wear belt and suspenders your whole life. Sometimes just a belt's okay, or sometimes just suspenders. Pants still stay up most of the time. How's that for analogy? Our phone number is 1-800-9-6. You're gonna just let me sit here and talk for another 15-20 minutes? 1-800-966-1039. Text line 601-207-4478. I got a text. Thank you. I got at least something to talk about. What happened to the Geyser hot water heat pumps? Nile stopped making them, and one of the reasons they stopped making them is an intriguing bit of policy politics. The heat pump water heaters that you can still buy are the ones like GE was selling. GE, I believe, sold out to Rheem. You can still buy the Rheem heat pump water heaters. And those are eligible for rebates. So what would be normally a retail $1,300, $1,600 thing, you get these rebates on and you wind up net cost being $300, $400, something like that. And that sells those heat pumps. Otherwise, people would probably not buy them as readily because they're $1,300. So Nile is making this heat pump water heater, and they've made them for years. And there's other companies that made them as well. But they were not able to get any eligibility for rebates. And the reason they couldn't, and I've said this story before, and it bears repeating where there's no phone calls, was Energy Star, which is some kind of national organization that I don't believe it's governmental. I think it's a private organization that I view as being kind of political, not Republican, Democrat, but just political in that there's different sides to things, will not rate a standalone heat pump water heater. It has to be an integrated, it has to be a system, quote unquote, which is the heat pump water heater like a Geyser always had to have a tank. Well, you could put it with an insulated tank, an uninsulated tank, a highly insulated tank, a poorly insulated tank. It still worked, but it wasn't as efficient with a poorly insulated tank. But, you know, not many people are that stupid they're going to hook it up to a poorly insulated tank. And if they are, so what? Let them pay the price. But you can't get a rebate for that. So you can't get, like, Efficiency Maine will give rebates for Energy Star related Energy Star rated appliances. Well, Nile couldn't get Energy Star rated because they were not a system. They made a great product for a reasonable price, but they just got beat up in the marketplace because of that. And it's sad. It really is, because here's a and you would think there would be some compensation for that or accommodation for the fact they were a Maine manufacturer and providing jobs in Maine. They make great products. So what they're doing, what Nile does, is they still make a Geyser brand, but it is a huge heat pump that they sell down in Florida, places like that, the Bahamas, for big resorts where it's always warm, and they make hot water for the resorts via heat pumps. And we don't get the benefit of their expertise because they can't get rebates. So, okay, back to the phones we go. Line two. Good morning. You're on the Voice of Maine.
Good morning, Tom.
Hi.
Last week you talked briefly about the new horizontally opposed engines with nearly 50% thermal efficiency.
Yeah.
And I can see coming down the future then would be more practical to have combined power buildings where you use the waste heat and you have good efficiency on an engine to generate power.
Hmm. Yeah, you know, I agree. And years ago, there were people doing systems like that here in the Bangor area. Mason Hill Builders was one, if anybody remembers them. They were doing diesel systems in the basement, coupled with a solar system with a big tank. And the waste heat from the diesel system, they co-generated, so they were feeding into the grid from the diesel system. The waste heat from the diesel, which was still significant, diesels aren't that efficient compared to gas, but all that waste heat went into storage and heated the building. And I've seen them all come out. and I suspect part of it is the reliability, the fact that you have an engine running in the basement or in somewhere. You know, it's not as simple as an oil burner. It's not as simple as it's not and most people are converting to gas. Gas is even simpler in some senses to me. The fact that you've got to maintain these systems really means that they fit better with bigger users like institutions. The Stirling engines are a similar setup as our fuel cells. Those are all cogeneration systems. The fuel cells might have the potential to fit better because they're in theory less complicated, but I'm not seeing it yet. I suspect we will at some point. There's a resurgence in fuel cell cars in the past. There's a lot of press about them in the past couple of months. Toyota is doing one in Japan, and it is $75,000, and I think there's a rebate in Japan of $25,000, so it's now a $50,000 car. They're not making any money on them either. They're hand-tooled at this point, but I think by 2030, they have the big goal of having a significant portion of the transportation infrastructure in Japan being hydrogen fuel cells. Let's see. We got a text here. Do you do a podcast? If so, how do you access it? If you go to the WVOM webpage, these shows are podcast. I don't do other podcast beyond that. At some point we will, but we do not at this point. Good morning. You're on the Voice of Maine. Hello?
Yes, I have a question about a heat pump.
Sure. What would you like to know?
I have a son who lives in Fort Worth, Texas, and put one in, a split, mini split this past year, and it got in late summer, early fall, and the temperature, it would bring the temperature down in the house, but not bring the humidity, it would actually rise.
Run that by me again. What's it doing?
It's lowering, the coolant is lowering the temperatures. It's like 90 degrees in Texas most of the time.
Yeah.
And it would bring it down to 70 degrees, but the humidity would rise to make it stifling. Now, they checked the drain tube. It was draining, dripping water, but they could never get the humidity down. Hmm. So I wonder what's going on.
Yeah. I don't know. Texas is a whole other ball game when it comes to humidity compared to up here. Makes us seem like we're living in the desert. I don't know, to be honest. I would, if he's not able to get any positive results from whoever put it in, I would be going back to the manufacturer and saying, look, can you have your district person come out and look at this? We're having because. You know, dehumidification and cooling go together, and either something is not sized properly or there is something not working right with the unit. And that's about as far as I go on heat pumps. It's at that point, you've got to have somebody coming in and checking the system. So I apologize for not having more info than that, but especially in Texas, man. I've been in Texas once. And I was changing planes. You know, when you go to little tunnels that take you to the plane. Well, there was a gap in between, and I was going to a solar thing in California. And this gap is Dallas Fort Worth, in between the entry thing and the plane, and that humidity just hit me in the face, and I'm like, dear God, get me out of here. I'm sure you get used to it, but man, California seemed awful nice. It was so dry, but yeah, and they got all the snakes and tarantulas too. I worked years ago with a guy. His name was Larry Duke, and it wasn't D-U-K-E. It was like D-Z-I-U-K, and he was Polish, and he was from Texas, and he had that, you know, he had Texas accent, and he said there's a lot of people. A lot of Polish people in Texas, and he regaled me in stories of. He was an entomologist, so man, he told me more bug stories than I ever want to know about. We were up here working on spruce budworm stuff at the time, and he was a cool guy. I miss Larry Duke. He loved polyester suits because they were always nice and clean, you know, crisp. He always looked dapper in his polyester suit. Our phone number, okay, is 1-800-966-1039. The text line 601-207-4478. If you'd like to call in today, I got a text message from Pete a little while ago. He is there with cars and trucks, and we'll have a couple of Tacomas out there in the next few days, or within the next week or so. And we got a bunch of newer Priuses coming in, 10s and 11s, and we've got a 12 that's going out today, and kind of interesting to be in the business and see what goes on in terms of what becomes available for vehicles. And when we picked up, I picked up one, 08 with 213,000 miles on it, and It ran like a top. I guess it needs some exhaust work, but I get in the car and it's doing 50 miles to the gallon, and it needs a little love. And I'm thinking, if it gets some love, what's it going to do for miles per gallon? It's just I tend to be amazed as I see the, especially this time of year when the weather starts to change a little bit, all of a sudden a lot of these cars pop up into the 50 mile per gallon range very easily without driving extraordinarily slow or trying to baby the car. I guess that's why they sell. And I guess that's why we deal with them. So, and Pete is there till 3 o'clock today. So if you're looking for a Prius, by all means, stop by. What else we got? if you know where my place, the new place is that we're moving to, you keep an eye as you drive by. You'll see the overhead door show up in the next day or so. I'm going to get the recip saw and the tin snips, and we're going to whittle our way out of the building and weather strip it and trim it out, and it'll all look quite presentable, I'm sure, when I'm finished. And then we will continue in. Once the overhead door is open, then we can start bringing in some of the big stuff. And that'll keep me moving in a positive direction. And any of my friends who want to come help, you're welcome to. My friend Tom, who showed up last week, who kept after me to make the time to have him come help. We got a lot done for a couple old guys. He's older than me, and he does good work, and I appreciate it. So other than that, I guess we're out of time for this week. We will be back next week, same time, same place, probably with less dead air than we had this week. So I think that's probably a step in the right direction as one who tries not to do radio with pregnant pauses. Have a great week. Enjoy springtime. We have made it. We have lived through another Maine winter, and it ain't going to snow no more. I promise you. You write that down on a piece of paper right next to that phone number for General Appliance. See you next week.